Yankees hot and heavy at 11. They're a mess right now. I saw a stat. The Yankees have had three straight losing Julys. For the first time in 30 years. Three straight Julys where they've had losing records.
So 23, 24 in this year.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think real quick because 22...
was the Astros series when they won so that was 100 games, like 101.
That was
whatever
it. They started out on fire, then they fell off a little bit. So not that year, though. They had a winning July that year. Okay.
No, with tonight's loss, this is obviously less. The Yankees have clinched a losing record in July for a third straight season. Before that, 30 straight years without posting a losing record in July.
Dude, we did it last night on Baseball Night in New York. The Yankees have since June 13th, since the Friday night that they were in Fenway.
Yeah, that's where it all.
They got swept that Monday. We came in, and I was like, dude, I'd be worried. Like, I
wasn't that worried. Yeah, I love the base running, but we're good.
Now, to be fair, you would say, well, it's just
I wasn't that bothered by it.
To be fair, I did not think that they would go in the tank, but they have the fifth prior to the loss last night. Prior to.
Yeah.
They have the fifth worst record in baseball since June 13th. That is like, there's the Yankees. They're there with the Rockies and the Marlins or whatever the crappy teams. Dude, the fifth worst record in the sport since June 13th.
It's a common theme. And again, we'll do them coming up later. But I don't know why they start well every year. Because if you're not a good team, you should never start off well. Like, there's just, it's got to be a little deeper than the hot starts, the 2 month malaise, and then a little regeneration at the end. Well, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Right, it was the exact same thing a year ago. Anyway, we're not going to talk about the Yankees now. We're going to talk about them in about 10 minutes. We keep saying that, and we keep talking about the Yankees. Gomez calling from Riverdale. What's up, Gomez?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you. You guys are my sports therapist right now, and I'm more of an emotional sports fan. But so my question is, why can we bring back Bader? Right? Why can we bring back Soriano? And then maybe we can send Vientos to the Athletics, get Denzel Clark possibly, get a bullpen arm, get Severiano back, and just pay money for Bader to come back.
Who back? Who was the second part? Severino, you're talking about?
Yes,
Severino.
Yeah.
Bader. Yeah. I mean,
you could.
I don't know if I want all those guys back. And thanks for the call, Gomez. I'm not sure. You want to bring back Iglesias as well? Like, I'm not chasing last year. Severino, to me, would have been fine as another depth piece in the rotation. But is he a difference maker at this point?
I don't think you need Severino. I like your starting staff.
That's what I'm saying.
Honestly.
But you could use, you like the staff, as do I, but, knock on wood here, what if one of them, something happens, whether it's Manaea with the loose bodies in the elbow, whether it's Senga, who's always banged up.
You call up a kid at that point.
Okay, well, that was the answer. So, I just want to know the plan for that. Ben, is it going to be Sproat or any of the other, Nolan McClain, Jonah
Wright.
Tom, whatever. I don't know if those guys are going to come up and be ready to start. Mm. I was thinking more bullpen, but that's why I'm saying even a depth piece, not Paul Blackburn himself, but maybe somebody like that or a little bit better, just like a serviceable, hey, give us five innings, let's get to the pen. To me, the priority has to be the bullpen. It's always been, and it will be until they address it. They need at least, to me, one more high-leverage arm, probably really two high-leverage arms.
I'd be surprised if two more come because Soto's already here. Definitely one. You're going to get at least one. I got to push back a little bit, though, and you're not the only one who've said this here. You and I have actually kind of talked around it before we all went on vacation, so it's come up before. I just think it's dangerous. Like, you take one of these kids and you call them up and you give them a different role. To me, if you're going to call Sproat to help out, it's going to be for a spot start. To me, I'm not taking a kid who's trying to figure out the major leagues and get major league hitters out, and now, by the way, throw a curveball, and in terms of a new routine, I want to make it a seamless transition. The transition is tough enough with the best hitters in the world.
But Stearns has done this before, and we've seen it work. And to me, the one prime example that comes to mind is David Price when he did it with the Rays when he first came up, where he burst onto the scene as a rookie in the postseason. What was it, 2009?
Nine. That was the 2009 World Series against Phillies. No, 2008. Nine was obviously Yankees.
Yeah,
2008.
Exactly, 2008.
Longoria, that team.
Yeah, yep. So my point is that we've seen this work before, and Stearns has done this with the Brewers, worked some of the younger pitchers in. Later in the year, like, in theory, I'm with you. It's why I wouldn't move Clay Holmes back to the bullpen. I know that's been a thing. Like,
see, I would, because he's already done it.
I know, but now they stretch him out to be a starter this year. Yeah. Look, they could do it, I guess. I just, once you make a decision on these guys, and now working Holmes back from from being a good reliever into building him up to being a starter, I'm not so sure I'm gonna the same year just push him back to the bullpen after trying to transition with the younger guys. Now you got to make sure that you tell them, hey, don't go out there and try to throw the ball through the wall.
Good luck getting a young kid who's making his major league debut with everybody watching.
Yeah, I get it, but those guys could be valuable weapons.
Yeah, no, I know they could. But you see, I would feel better with Holmes going back to a role that he's already knows, if they even have to do this, rather than taking a kid and completely changing what he does, his routine.
Leary calling from Bergenfield. What's up, Leary?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? BT, last week you were the one that broke the Hulk Hogan news for me, man. Mm. Brutal. I took it a lot harder than I really thought I ever would, to be honest.
It still hurts. I got to tell you, Lear, Sam and I were talking during the break. I was watching WrestleMania 5 last night with my son, who's obviously young. He doesn't love wrestling, but he's getting into it a little bit. And it's like, it's still with me, too. There has not been a day that I have not popped on a little Hogan YouTube just for a little bit.
It's everywhere. Reading the clips or watching the clips on social media, reading stuff about it. They did a tribute last night on Monday Night Raw where Nick Hogan was there. They did the 10-bell salute. It's hard to believe he's actually gone.
I couldn't agree more, guys. It's a tough loss for Americana. But one point I wanted to bring up. Yesterday was one of the darkest days in MLB umpiring history, I think. First off, what I saw in the Mets and Padres game was a disgrace. And I am all against robo-umps, but now I'm starting to warm up and open up to the idea. I also don't know if you guys saw, I think it was the Blue Jays and Orioles last night. I mean, there was one right down the pipe. And this guy called it a ball. I mean, what kind of quality umpires are we getting here?
Well, those are two different things. I did not see the call that you referenced in the Toronto game. I'll take your word for it. These umpires stink. And I will say they're also very fooled by the catchers who are so adept. The way they frame balls, we make it seem like it's really easy. Now, it's also their job, so figure it the hell out at this point and stop getting, fooled by these catchers who are framing. But last night's umpire with the Mets-Padres game, I mean, that guy's got to get a grip. The way he was just eyeballing, they missed the first at bat in particular, that high slider from Dylan Cease, which was a ball, and then rung up Soto.
That was brutal.
That was horrendous. Yeah. That was one of the worst calls I've seen to Soto or any Yankee or Met all year, actually. It was egregiously high. It was horrible. But then how he was baiting him. Did you see him just staring at him for like 7 or 8 seconds, like staring at him, waiting for him to just say one thing? Your job is to defuse, not elevate. And these umpires haven't gotten the memo lately. It's ridiculous.
The one thing I would say specifically. Yeah. The one thing I would say. Well, you and umpires, BT.
Yeah,
the one thing I would say about last night's ump with Soto, I thought that he could have. Now, obviously, I'm not hearing what's being said. Soto didn't back away.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the ump, if he did have a short fuse or a quick trigger, could have tossed Soto. Now, Mendy came out the perfect time.
Good job by
he
Mendy.
He took the bullet. Yeah. But at least, and even if the ump, and Gary Cohen referenced it, oh, what's the ump doing walking, but it was the other ump. It was the third base ump.
Correct.
I think it was going down the line. So at least the ump didn't throw Soto out. If he did that, that would have been a disaster. Now, the actual calls, which is the biggest issue, that can be fixed with the tap in the helmet and you go into the ABS system or whatever. But even that, there are going to be limitations.
It's going to be one per bat, I believe.
You
can't do it every pitch.
So it's one per night. But it is one per at bat.
That's my understanding. In the minor leagues, the experimental phases, I believe it's one per at bat.
Now, I would like to see them implement that sooner than later, and I can't believe I'm even saying that.
Yeah, I know.
You don't want to see the postseason get screwed up by bad calls. But you and I, when we initially were discussing this, was like, good, because it's going to eliminate the bullcrap cheating with the framing. And it might not, because if it's only one pitch per at bat, I guarantee these guys are still going to be taught then to try to steal pitches.
Well, that would be for the challenge, but eventually when it goes to the system, the framing wouldn't
supersede
that.
So that's different than the ABS challenge system.
To my knowledge, it is.
All right.
I know, I'll pick that up after. I'm going to jot it down. Something about umps. We'll get to it after. It's all good.
You get to Hoff saying two challenges per game.
Oh, is it two? Oh, really?
Well, yeah, it'd be either the pitcher, the catcher, or the hitter, but as a team, you could do two challenges per game.
What? That doesn't make any sense.
You got to be very judicious.
Otherwise, you challenge everything.
But if you're Juan Soto and you want to challenge it, then what does that mean? Alonso can't,
it's placement. That's part of this whole thing, too.
Well,
this is a bigger conversation.
I'm sure he's reading it from somewhere, so I believe him. But it's like if I'm Soto and I have a keen sense of the strike zone, and I'm like, that's definitely a ball. But Mendoza's like, nah, it's a little bit early. Let's not do it. I'm like, no, it's a ball. I want to review that pitch.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It always sounds great, and then the implementation of it is going to be a whole nother level of a potential mess. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll get to the Yankees. We'll get back to your Mets calls as well and the Vientos stuff. Should they trade him? Should they keep him? 888-808-1019. But the Yankees talk coming up next.